From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
On the panel this week, Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Dan Raviv, National Correspondent for Israeli-based I-24 News. Our moderator is USA Today columnist and West Wing Reports correspondent, Paul Brandis.
Hello, thank you for joining us. And here are the issues. A new justice for the U.S. Supreme Court, if Brett Kavanaugh can be approved. Who is he, and will the Senate approve him? Tension at Brussels as leaders from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, better known as NATO, met, and they got an earful from President Trump about defense spending and Russia. The president this week also stepped up his tariff fight against China. We'll talk about that. And Britain's Brexit battle. There have been some dramatic developments in recent days. Well, let's start with the Supreme Court. For our global listeners, this, of course, is the highest court in the United States. It's also one of the three branches of the United States government. There are nine justices, but one is retiring. And to replace him, President Trump has nominated a man named Brett Kavanaugh. Republicans obviously love him. Democrats, not so much. Dan, who is Brett Kavanaugh?
He's a pretty standard conservative judge. He's on an appeals court here in Washington, D.C., and that means that a lot of the cases that come to that court are of national importance, national security issues, privacy, things that involve the federal government. So he has the right kind of experience, and as far as people in Donald Trump's party, the Republican Party, are concerned, he has the right background. He seems to have the right viewpoint. People who, in fact, would like to ban abortion in the United States, they think that he'll vote eventually on some case, if it comes to the court, that would reverse a famous decision from the 1970s that pretty much made abortion legal in the United States. We don't know if he'll do that. And when he has hearings in the United States Senate, because it's up to the Senate whether or not to confirm him, Kavanaugh will probably avoid answering directly how he feels about any particular subject, but he'll give the impression as a solid person. He was introduced at the White House, by the way, with his wife, with his two daughters, in his very well-crafted speech introducing himself. He described himself as a family person, someone who cares about women. That's an important factor in maybe getting a few liberals over to his side and not losing some conservative women. And he's done a good job so far. One last thing, I think President Trump chose Kavanaugh because he's just 53 years old, which gives the thought that since it's a lifetime job, he could be on the Supreme Court for, well, who knows, a long life, 30, 40 years.
Well, that's a good point if you consider the four conservatives on the court. Now, if you look at the age when they were first put on the court, average age 49, the four leftist-leaning judges, a full 5 years older. So Dan has a good point. Clarence Thomas, by the way, has been on the court for more than a quarter century. He's still just 70 years old.
He's one of the conservative justices. Right. Yeah, and there were two, if you will, liberal justices. Hey, we never know, but mm-hmm. we expect them to end their service perhaps soon, which means that Donald Trump could get more opportunities.
That's right.
Now, Linda, Dan talked about how the process, of course, goes through the Senate. Mm-hmm. Kavanaugh will first face hearings in the Judiciary Committee, mm-hmm. assuming he passes that hurdle. Then there will be a vote in the full Senate. How's all that shaping up?
It's going to be very difficult for Democrats to stop this nomination. It's no longer possible to filibuster a Supreme Court nomination. When we had the filibuster, i.e. endless debate, you had to get 60 votes to end the filibuster and then move on to the majority vote. Now it's just a pure majority. Republicans have a slim majority. 51, majority. The Republicans have a slim majority in the Senate, and some Democrats are hopeful that they can sway a Republican or two not to go for him, not to go for Kavanaugh, and also to prevent some Democrats in conservative, Trump-leaning states from voting for Brett Kavanaugh. I think all of this is a super-duper-duper long shot. I really think Kavanaugh is going to sail through, actually, that he could very easily get some of the Democrats who are up for re-election in November and who need Trump-leaning people to vote for them to save their seats. So I think this horse is out of the barn. Now, whether we see, say, Kavanaugh as the dramatic fifth vote that would overturn a nationwide right to abortion, I actually doubt that. I think what we're seeing is the Chief Justice, John Roberts, moving into the swing position. And so this is actually not the most critical vacancy in the court. It is the next to come. If it is one of these liberal justices, then watch all heck break loose.
Would you agree that for now, this looks like a win for Trump?
He's chosen,
shall we say, a good nominee who's likely to get through.
Absolutely. And this is a nominee. I'm actually surprised he chose Brett Kavanaugh, actually. Kavanaugh is an establishment Republican, and Trump smashes the establishment whenever he can. He had other people on his list who would have been far more maverick, aggressive, super social conservative. Kavanaugh is somebody that any of the recent Republican presidents, the type of person that any recent Republican president would have nominated.
Now, to something we were talking about before, how many more justices could Trump get? And let's assume that if he's reelected, he's going to get a lot more, no question about it, if he serves for another, say, 6 years. But even in his remaining 2.5 years in office, there is one justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 85 years old. She has a history of cancer. There is Stephen Breyer, who turns 80 in a couple of weeks. It's not inconceivable that he could get one, possibly two more picks just in the next couple of years.
And as we've been underlining, to replace two liberal justices, changing the face of the court. By the way, for anyone listening, they may wonder again, does Donald Trump really care? Because one of the themes we've been talking about, certainly on issues in the news and, you know, all over the media, is whether Donald Trump has core values and really is a conservative or really is anti-abortion, or does he just like it to look like he's winning? And obviously, like any president, he does want to leave his mark on America. Right. Well, the Supreme Court does do that because you put someone there for decades. And so I'm sure that appeals to him.
All right. Well, let's move on here. Leaders from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, better known as NATO, met in Brussels, Belgium. You know, usually these gatherings are kind of cut and dry, a little bit boring, but that doesn't happen when the president of the United States is Donald Trump. And it was anything but boring. It was quite tense, strained, even perhaps unfriendly at times. And it was mostly about money, Dan.
That is usually the subject that grabs Donald Trump's attention, measuring things by dollars and cents. And he arrived in Brussels having said beforehand and continuing to say that the other allies in the NATO alliance, and right now there are 30, Macedonia just joined, the other countries are not paying enough. He points to an agreement from a few years ago that all the countries should pay 2% of their gross domestic product into defense. Not literally to the NATO alliance, but should spend that on defense and some of it for NATO. And he's proud to say that he's boosted United States defense or military spending. It's at about 3.5% of America's GDP. Of course, it's not all spent in Europe. So he put a lot of pressure. He tried to insult the Europeans, and he especially attacked Germany and literally Angela Merkel's government in Berlin when he said, why is Germany buying its energy, meaning natural gas, from an important pipeline from Russia? He said, if NATO is all about defending against Russia, why is Germany spending billions of dollars on Russian energy? Makes no sense. So he's questioning even the validity of why have a NATO alliance and saying America doesn't want to pay so much of it as it does.
Well, the whole pipeline thing is not new. I mean, there was a debate even during the Reagan era about what was then West Germany getting energy from the Soviets. So that's nothing new. And that's actually a legitimate point. But it also brings up this issue of the president and Russia. He's so hard on American allies, Linda. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Vladimir Putin, not so much. Why is that?
Well, that is, I think, the question hanging over the Trump presidency, which we've seen since before he became president and then since the issue of Russian meddling in our elections came up. The reality is that he does have this attraction to Vladimir Putin. I think Trump is attracted to the way Putin projects power and the way he dominates his country and dominates the region around him and admires that. We know that Trump admires other strongmen around the world, people like Duterte in the Philippines. So when Trump and Putin meet on Monday, that will be absolutely fascinating. And I think I expect it to look a lot like the meeting with Kim Jong-un the leader of North Korea, a lot of pomp and circumstance, a lot of sort of preening and posing for the camera, a lot about optics, and maybe not as much kind of solid agreements on anything. But what people are worried about is what he's going to say, what he's going to possibly give away or suggest that he might give away. Potentially, you know, NATO exercises, he might suggest those go away.
And that would be similar to the talks
exactly.
with the leader of North Korea, which was a month ago in Singapore. But, you know, from Trump's point of view, and he does sometimes say this, what is there to gain mm-hmm. from having a bad relationship with Russia? Or he mm-hmm. would even say with North Korea, the way he thinks, mm-hmm. at least as he explains his strategies, if you have someone who's been a foe of the United States, try to change that by being friendly. Mm-hmm. The converse seems to be true, too. If you have a set of countries that are traditionally friends of the United States,
right.
how can the United States win something from them, a better trade deal,
right.
or making them pay more of the NATO bill?
Mm-hmm.
He says, by being tough on mm-hmm. your friends. I know it may sound strange, but he's an unconventional president.
Right, and it's all about the way he uses his leverage. So he has leverage with both camps, the Russia camp and the European ally camp.
By being friendly to Russia, so he says.
By being friendly to Russia and antagonistic toward his allies.
It's unusual.
Of course, there are a lot of American allies, American analysts who say that that the president is doing Trump's doing Putin's bidding for him.
Mm-hmm,
is that
mm-hmm.
a reasonable point?
Absolutely. I mean, we know that Putin wants to weaken Western alliances, whether it's NATO or the European Union. And that is happening. That is a fact. And we're seeing that in London with the meeting with Theresa May and his weakening of her with the interview in The Sun, which was so damaging to her, I think.
President Trump seemed to be supporting right her political rival in the Conservative
exactly.
Party, Boris Johnson.
So Boris Johnson resigns as foreign minister, potentially setting himself up to challenge Theresa May for the prime ministership. And Trump loves that. He loves Boris Johnson. He's a kind of Trumpian character with the hair. And he's, again, breaking the norms, Trump is, on how you behave on foreign soil. One usually is deferential toward the leader of that country. Trump doesn't play that game. So there we have it, an embarrassed Theresa May, the White House having to put out a statement at 2 o'clock in the morning, London time, to try to dig themselves out of that embarrassing interview. But Trump, I think, loves it. I think it's the Trump tornado, which we're used to in Washington and which we're now seeing in Europe.
And just to bring this back here, when Trump, my own view, tell me quickly, Dan, when Trump says things like this, you know, he's really talking to his base back here in the United States with this kind of stuff.
Well, more than anything, I don't think that most American voters are aware of the details of international affairs, Brexit, European Union, mm-hmm. British politics, or even that much about Putin and Crimea, Russia having grabbed Crimea from Ukraine. But his voters in the U.S. get a general impression whether we have a president who's different, breaking the usual rules, going out there boldly. You talk to a lot of conservative voters across America, and they say, I like him because he's telling it like it is, and he's mm-hmm. telling the truth, and he's not being polite the way other politicians were, and so his base likes it.
All right, well, let's pause for a short break. More Issues in the News in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you on the Voice of America from Washington. A reminder that Issues in the News is available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com, and don't forget to like us on Facebook. Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Dan Raviv, National Correspondent for Israeli-based I-24 News. Our moderator is Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports and USA Today.
Welcome back. The United States is involved in a forefront trade war with Canada, with the European Union, with Mexico. But the biggest battle for now appears to be with China, and the stakes were upped pretty dramatically this week when President Trump said that he would issue tariffs on an additional $200 billion worth of Chinese products. China says it will retaliate. Linda, where is this going?
We appear to be headed for a full-fledged trade war, and that sounds scary, and it is. Once we get to a point where these tariffs are fully in place, there's a timeline here. Trump, yes, can issue the list of items that will face tariffs unilaterally, but there is a comment period. And so these, if it goes through, it would go, it would be the end of August. So if people are looking for an impact immediately, they won't see it. But over time, as we'll see it with higher prices in this country of Chinese imports, and American farmers and other manufacturers will see it on their goods going overseas. Their prices are low. Soybean farmers are seeing very low prices and are very worried about the future of their livelihood.
Well, on that point, real quickly, you know, Linda mentioned, Dan, that the Chinese are retaliating in what appears to be a really clever way. They appear to be micro-targeting tariffs that they think are going to hurt and they hope anger Trump voters, soybean farmers, for example. But the question is, will they really blame Trump or will they just blame China if they're hurt by these tariffs?
Oh, well, Americans, for instance, if they are farmers, well, that's a good question. Certainly President Trump will put all the blame on China for having treated America badly for many, many years. As a matter of fact, the White House has already put out a statement directed at farm states saying, in effect, trust me, this strategy is going to work. You're going to be better off. But for now, there might be some short-term pain. That means China might buy less when it comes to American soybeans. After all, they'd be too expensive with the extra tariffs slapped on it. And then you add to that, so many Americans will find that imports from China are suddenly more expensive, a lot of goods that we all like to buy. And again, you would think the typical American, including Trump voters, won't like that. But the White House is aware of that. I think they're going to try to say, patience, it's going to work. Typically, people don't have patience, so I wonder if it will.
And another interesting point, when after the U.S. Released its list, 195-page list of Chinese exports worth $200 billion, all eyes turned to Beijing. What will they do in response? So far, nothing. So I'm not saying they blinked, but the ball is in their court, and when we're talking $200 billion worth of goods, that's a lot, even given the massive size of both the American and Chinese economies. So I think what China does will be very significant in terms of whether we do get into a very large-scale trade war as opposed to the more discrete situation.
And just the other day, the Treasury Secretary here in Washington, Steve Mnuchin, said, we're ready to have talks again with China if they're ready to be reasonable. Right. Obviously, things are pointing toward another round of talks.
A trade war, far nothing.
A trade war doesn't help anybody. How long can it go on without meaningful negotiations?
Right, and there are no negotiations right now. And again, I think it's Trump trying to create leverage, and we don't know what he'll get, but that's I think that's his game.
Here's something else to think about real quickly. You know, Peter Navarro, the hardline trade negotiator in the White House, said a couple of months ago, and I think this was a miscalculation, clearly was a miscalculation. He said, I don't think anybody is ever going to retaliate against the United States because we're the biggest economy in the world. We're too powerful. They simply won't do it. That certainly does not appear to be the case.
You should never make predictions, especially about the behavior of the other side. Never make predictions.
Right. But can I just make one more point? I think what's really critical, it's easy to criticize Trump for his norm-busting ways, but China does steal the intellectual property, not only of American innovators and businesses, but also the Europeans. I mean, everybody. The Chinese steal from everybody. And I think a lot of people support the fact that he is taking them on in a more aggressive way than any previous president in modern America.
Well, that's true, I think. And I think the figure attached to that is something like $600 billion a year, according to the former director of the NSA, who wrote a report about it. And a lot of that is kind of stealth, taking of intellectual property, cyber hacking, and that kind of thing.
But
$600 billion a year.
But also the rules on setting up joint ventures. I mean, you have these Americans who want to work in China are required to, I think, give it up. I mean, some of it is just hidden in plain sight.
Something else kind of quickly here, slightly ancillary. You know, Trump upping this tariff war against China, but at the same time, expecting them to cooperate on North Korea. How does that play out in your view, Dan?
It comes up all the time from President Trump, by the way, because he did offer an explanation for why North Korea is being a little difficult in recent weeks when he said maybe China because of the trade disputes, is spurring the North Koreans to be tough on us. And I believe his tweet more or less said, better not be happening, that would be bad, something of that sort. So Trump certainly sees the connection there. And it's likely to be true, except North Korea acts in many mysterious ways. By the way, we should mention that in recent days, generally U.S. officials have been disappointed. North Korean officials didn't show up for talks that were supposed to be aimed at agreeing on a way to look for the remains of U.S. soldiers missing in Korea since the 1950s. And Kim Jong-un and President Trump had agreed that there'd be a process for that. And the U.S. says North Korea didn't even show up at the meeting. And North Korea, on the other hand, sent a letter to President Trump that was nice, as President Trump put it on Twitter, where he revealed the entire letter. But it was all just general words, no promises of anything. And the
word didn't mention denuclearization
not at all.
Yeah.
And so I find that U.S. officials are disappointed, but wondering. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who went back to North Korea just about a week ago, he's trying to patch it together.
All right. Well, let's move on quickly to Brexit. 2 years of talks within her own conservative cabinet. Theresa May, she, of course, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, appears to have made a little bit of progress on Brexit. That, of course, is the name for the plan for Britain to leave the European Union. It looks like sort of her plan is now sort of a softer exit plan. And that's really angered a lot of conservatives in her government. Two of them have left. The most prominent, I think we mentioned, Boris Johnson, the foreign secretary. So a split even within her government. So what's going to happen here, Linda?
My sense is that Theresa May's government is just right on the edge. I mean, she having this blowback on a soft exit from the EU has really damaged her, and Trump coming in and beating her up as well. It's not that Trump can call the shots on British politics, but whenever an American president opens his mouth, it has impact. And Trump is offering aid and comfort to Boris Johnson and the others on the conservative side who want a hard exit. And I honestly don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, a lot of British commentators are noting that Barack Obama, when he was president, also tried a little bit of interference before the famous Brexit vote, the referendum in the UK, in which Brits, by a narrow margin, but still impressively, decided to get out of the European Union. Barack Obama had said, don't do it, because then Britain will be at the back of the queue for negotiating its own trade deal with the US. Mm-hmm. Now, Trump, on the other hand, said, no, you'll be at the front of the queue. If you make a hard break from the EU, in effect, I will thank you and I will reward you with a good trade deal. And once again, on Friday in a news conference with Theresa May, he was saying he looks forward to having a trade deal with the UK. And so he's sort of beckoning that you really should leave the European Union. I think that that's a real goal on his part. He doesn't like multilateral agreements. He has said in public that the European Union was set up as a competitor to the U.S., to knock the United States. So he wants to weaken the EU.
But doesn't he also, didn't he say he won't do a bilateral trade deal if there's a soft exit? It has to be a hard exit for him to to do that.
He'll reward the U.K. if they do a hard exit, in his view. It's an amazing bit of meddling in U.K. politics, but it does have a goal. I'm, again, the Trumpian way of looking at things. The U.S. wants to negotiate with each country one at a time. So pick them off, if possible, get them out of their multilateral European Union.
Right.
Now, Trump has said, talking about all these bilateral deals that he wants, what bilateral deals has he actually forged in his first year and a half?
So far, not. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership is what really comes to mind. That was a grouping of about a dozen countries, and it's continuing without the United States. And they were agreeing on standards for their goods, and they were aiming at lowering tariffs and making free trade, including just about every important country around the edges of the Pacific except China. And so under Barack Obama and other world leaders, they wanted to box out China. That didn't appeal to Donald Trump. And so he walked away from TPP. He said he'd like to replace it with one-on-one agreements. There have been some talks on and off. So far, nothing.
So he says he didn't like the idea. He's in a trade war with China now, but he didn't like the prospect before of boxing out China.
The main reason was that he doesn't like multilateral groupings. And so he was sticking with that. He likes to say, I'm very consistent. And he added, maybe jokingly, maybe not, the other day, I'm a stable genius, about himself.
All right. We're going to have to end it right there. Our thanks to two of Washington's most prominent journalists, Dan Raviv, he, of course, with Israel's I-24 News, and Linda Feldman of the Christian Science Monitor. This program was produced by the Voice of America Current Affairs, our engineer, Justin Thwaites, and I'm Paul Brandis of USA Today and West Wing Reports. Thanks for listening.